then have to hear, listen from the department. But let me say, honorable members, after the department, because we're dealing with a very serious matter, 245, we will request honorable members, Matlala and Khawula are not here. We have to finalize this issue today. Otherwise, if we don't, then we may have to come back again and find closure on the matter, because no decision we'll be able to take if we don't form a quorum. And I think as members of, as public representatives, the hopes and the wishes of our people are on us. So we just want to make that appeal that we be patient today. We understood the amount of work that we need to do. But secondly, we will request in the event there is a voting, or if we finish early, that's much better. Hopefully by 4 we could be done. If we finish early, members can then be able to go and join the house. Or alternatively, when we go, we are required to vote. We may equally just have to register to the house that we are present. Initially thinking of taking members to say at 3 when the house resumes, we allow members to go and register, but I think we will try and push so that you are not marked absent when you are present doing the work. DG, I've already gave the background from, thank you very much, congratulations on being a whether you are a new father or you are a father again, congratulations on being a man. I hope everything went well. Like I said last week, we couldn't be able to deal with the issue. Others have all of you have redeemed yourselves. The business rescue practitioner was not here. Thanks to the efforts, I'm sure also themselves now they've realized how much they've missed and how much they nearly find themselves on the other side. We we requested last week, I'm sure you have read it, that you be present or any other senior person on the basis that the delegation that was here, with all due respect, it's people who are in acting capacity, but also who couldn't, we understand at the same time, be able to take to account for some of the issues. Well, precisely on those grounds that we then said, no, we need a stronger, bigger delegation that can be able to present to this committee. We are trying to find and seek solutions, as I've said before. But most importantly is also to understand how did we find ourselves in this situation. I think lastly is to be able to again emphasize the point that we are not just prioritizing this, but we are looking at the consequences if this matter is not attended to. So we'll give it to you, DG. You will decide whether you introduce your well-known delegation and whoever does the presentation, but the ball is in your court now.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me take this opportunity also to convey my greetings to honorable members, the union reps that are in attendance, and also the senior officials from the Department of Mineral Resources and other officials that are here from different institutions. In terms of our team, Honorable Chair, I have Mr. Zondi, who is the acting chief Inspector of Mines. I also have Mr. Mahasana, who is also a director from the Mine Health and Safety. We also have the acting DDG, Mineral Regulation, Advocate Malebe, We also have Mrs. Or Ms. Reboni Nkambule, who is responsible for central regions. In terms of our presentation, Honorable Chair, we have a presentation outline that I would not go through it because we will deal with the content of the issues that are contained within the presentation as per the questions that have been raised by honorable members. We have the introduction. In fact, in terms of the introduction, we have dealt with this part earlier on, but the most important part that we would want to reflect on, it is on the presentation that it covers the questions that we already raised in regard with the Tekeeta-owned mines. We have also indicated that the number is not only one optimum. I think this question has been exhausted. We have also enlisted the number of mines that we'll be dealing with in this presentation. Then as for the background, which is also linked to the question that has been raised by honorable members, Optimum Coal Mine is the holder of the mining right, which is currently owned by Tekeeta Exploration and Resources. Brakfontein Mine is also the holder of the mining right. It has two operations in Mpumalanga. We also have Itwala that is still under care and maintenance, and also Korenfontein. They are both in Mpumalanga. We have Shiva Uranium Mine that is based in Northwest, and we also have Vryheid Revival Mines. They are four in total. They are also owned by Tekeeta, and they are in the KZN region. Then as for the situation at Optimum, this issue was also raised earlier on, but I will just touch on it briefly, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. The primary concern at Optimum Mines, it mainly revolved around the issues of delayed payment of salaries of permanent employees, as well as non-payment to the contractors and suppliers. Then this state of affairs at Optimum resulted in employees as well as suppliers embarking on an industrial action. The other point in regard to with Optimum is that we have a total number of 1,559 employees that will be affected in this mine. That is also Korenfontein, which is included. This includes the contractors, and this is according to our records. While the business rescue practitioners, they have reported the date in which they were appointed, but officially as a department, we were notified on the 1st of March that there is a business rescue practitioner or the business rescue practitioners that have been appointed. We must also emphasize this point, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, that the company failed to adhere to the material terms and conditions of the approved social and labor plan. Then as a result of that, the department issued Section 93 order on the 19th of February 2018 to remedy the non-compliances relating to their SLP commitments. And the company is expected to respond to Section 93 order by the 18th of April 2018. We would also want to bring to the attention of the PPC that the company also failed to adhere to the rehabilitation commitments and a Section 31L notice in terms of National Environmental Management Act was issued on the 15th of February 2018. I would like to proceed to the next mine, which is Vryheid Revival Mines. The company has four rights and only two are operational. The company has applied for the renewal of the mining rights, which have been granted by the department. The employees and contractors have been paid for February 2018. Then it's one a very important point that the committee also deliberated upon this morning. Now, during the course of this month, I think we don't know what is going to happen with the employees, but I think the committee will be able to advise accordingly on this aspect. as we have also given an instruction to the business rescue practitioners. Although the business rescue applies to the company as an entity, the department has not been informed of the BRP, and so we are just dealing with this based on the fact that we are aware that all these mines have been put under business rescue, but we have not been informed formally as yet by the BRP, but they have confirmed this morning that 8 mines are under business rescue, and so this one as well is also included. A total number of 99 employees will be affected according to our records. The situation at Shiva Uranium Mine. Shiva Uranium has 3 mining rights adjacent to each other, and its social and labor plans have also been integrated into one. Employees have also been paid for February 2018. Contractors have been paid, and business rescue practitioners have taken over the running of the mine. We have a total number of 226 employees that will be affected, and this is according to our records. There was also a question in relation with the business rescue process, Honorable Chair. As it has been explained, that the purpose of business rescue is to maximize the likelihood of the company continuing in existence on a solvent basis or create a better result than would have been the case under liquidation circumstances. And so the minister has also touched on this point. DMR would also file as a creditor in respect of shortfall of financial provision for rehabilitation. And the DMR would also continue to engage with the business rescue practitioners. And so we have met with them a day before yesterday, and the minister had a very constructive engagement with the business rescue practitioners. We have just a demonstration here that shows that in terms of the business rescue practitioners, their main objective is to help financially distressed companies and also to find a best solution. And so this is actually being done in a balanced way. All the interests of the stakeholders are being considered, and the rights as well of stakeholders are being looked into. Sale of assets in terms of the MPRDA. The point that we would want to clarify in respect of Section 11, Honorable Chair, is that we only receive Section 11 after a company has entered into a business or a commercial transaction with any company that they have identified. And now it is only during that time that a ministerial consent will be required for the rights now to be ceded. As you know, that Section 11 process is a commercial transaction that is being entered into between parties, and it must also go through the Competition Commission and other regulatory bodies prior to the lodging of an application to transfer the rights. There was also an issue around whether the mine has been sold or not. Are we aware as a department? According to the department records, there are no Section 11 applications received from the company to another entity. As for the financial provision for rehabilitation, and this is under Mpumalanga region, the financial provision is held with the Bank of Baroda for Optimum and Korenfontein mines. I think we had lengthy discussions around the issue of a Bank of Baroda this morning. And the financial provision for both operations are subject to a freezing order that has been granted in favor of OTA on the 16th of September 2017. The department has also received a notification from NetBank dated the 14th of February 2018, alerting the department of its intention to also withdraw the guarantees. Upon the receipt of this notification, The department responded on the 15th of February 2018, directing the bank to transfer the funds into the department's bank account. Financial provision for rehabilitation, Optimum Coal Mine, we have a liability of 1.5 billion and the financial provision is around 1.6 billion. There is no shortfall and the method of payment, method of financial provision, it is through a trust fund and the holder of the financial provision is Bank of Baroda. As I've said, that there is no action that has been taken because there is no shortfall. Brakfontein, it is 20 million. Then the financial provision is 9 million, and then the shortfall is 11. And so the method of financial provision here is bank guarantees and trust fund. And then the holder of the financial provision is Nedbank and Liberty Group, which is a subsidiary of Standard Bank. The company was instructed to pay the shortfall. Under Korenfontein, we have a liability that is at 135 million and the financial provision in place is 360 million and there's no shortfall. And the method of financial provision is through a trust fund and Bank of Baroda is the holder of the financial provision. We have Itwala. The liability is 8.6. The financial provision in place is 2.4. In essence, we have a shortfall of 6.1 under this mine. Then the trust fund is the method of financial provision, and the holder of the financial provision is Liberty Group Limited, which is also a subsidiary of Standard Bank. The mine is on care and maintenance at the moment, and so there may be a discussion around this particular aspect as to what is going to happen then if the mine is under care and maintenance. And so we would work very closely with the business rescue practitioners to make sure that we have an amicable way of resolving this matter. Intervention by the department in addressing environmental non-compliances. The department had engagements between October 2016 and February 2018 with the representatives of Optimum Operations. The primary objective of the meeting was to address non-compliances, and this included the following issues. The withdrawal of the financial provision from the Optimum Mine Rehabilitation Trust held by Standard Bank, to confirm whether there was a withdrawal or the transfer of financial provision from the Standard Bank to Bank of Baroda, whether Optimum Coal had approval from the department to withdraw or transfer the financial provision to Bank of Baroda, and also to address the rehabilitation backlog at Optimum Coal, covering approximately 3,400 hectares, because here we're looking at a concurrent rehabilitation. There was an agreement that the mine would do a concurrent rehabilitation. Then according to their reviewed rehabilitation plan, Optimum Coal undertook to rehabilitate a total of 598 hectares per year. If such rehabilitation was successfully implemented, then the department, as part of further intervention, may determine whether there is a surplus of submitted financial provision in order to release the excess funds. The engagements also addressed the review of the financial liability for all their operations. The department conducted compliance inspections during the same period to monitor the implementation of the rehabilitation plan. It was detected that the rehabilitation program was not implemented as committed by Optimum Coal Mine. The statutory notice for non-compliance was issued on the 15th of February 2018 to remedy the non-compliance. The current liability for 2017-2018 is yet to be reviewed, and a formal annual financial provision assessment period is due now in March 2018. Financial provision for rehabilitation, here I will deal with KZN and Northwest. Flyhead Revival Mines, there is no liability because no operational or none, or it is non-operational. The financial provision is around 953. Then, as I've said, that there are four mines under this mine, Freyheit Revival Mines. Then we have a liability of 2.2 million, and the financial provision is in place. We also have a liability for 1.5. There is actually a financial provision in place of 1.7. Then we have a liability, the mining right 16MR. There is no liability actually under this mine because it is non-operational. Then there is actually a financial provision that was also committed of 1.9. Then as for Shiva Uranium, we can also confirm, Honorable Chair, that the liability is at 100 million. Then the financial provision is at 62 million. And there is actually a hold of financial provision, that is a guard risk insurance. It is around 38 million. And so a directive has been issued that the shortfall held by Bank of Baroda must be paid as cash deposit into the DMR's account. Social and labor plan compliance at optimum. During 2016, a complaint was received by the department with regard to non-payment of the service provider by Optimum for the construction of Kwaram Kuhle Health Center. Investigation was conducted on the general compliance of the SLP. Then the department detected following non-compliance issues: the non-submission of annual reports, HRD, LED, and procurement. The intervention by the department with regard to SLP's non-compliance in Mpumalanga. In the arranged meeting, it was detected that the approved SLP has since expired in December 2017. The department instructed Optimum Mine to identify all areas of non-compliance with the first approved SLP's commitments and provide remedial action plan. The department has further instructed Optimum to submit the second SLP to be assessed by the department with an immediate effect. The department has issued the Section 93 statutory notice on the 15th of February 2018 for non-compliance. The company is still under the 60-day period to make a presentation to the department on how to remedy non-compliance. The department has since been notified of the business rescue practitioner process, which will outline the process of adhering to non-compliance. At Korenfontein coal mine, the holder of the mining right, which is currently owned by Tegeta Exploration and Resources. Investigation with general compliance of SLP was also conducted. Even at this mine, the department has detected non-compliance with annual report, HRD, and employment equity, LED, and procurement. The department instructed Korenfontein Mine to extend the invitation to all relevant stakeholders, namely Korenfontein mine management, suppliers and vendors of both Optimum and Korenfontein mine, organized labor movements, and also the LED manager from Stiefchete local municipality. As part of the material terms and conditions of the aforesaid right, Brakfontein operation must comply with the conditions of the approved social and labor plan. And so as we are aware that there is a business rescue practitioner that is now in place, and we'll take this matter up with the business rescue practitioner. The SLP inspection was also conducted on the 26th of January 2018, and the department detected non-compliance with the submission of annual report, HRD, LED, housing and living conditions, and also the establishment of the future forum. The department issued Section 93 order on the 15th of February 2018, directing the company to remedy all the identified non-compliance issues. The company is still under the 60-day period, and the department is still waiting for a representation from the company. The company is currently implementing SLP 1, which is 2011 to 2016. HRD, only external and internal learnerships implemented, all other training programs not implemented. Management control, mining charter, which is mining charter 2010, targets not met. LED, company committed to three projects and one is delayed. On housing, no historical hostels, no home ownership scheme in place, the company pays a transport allowance. On downscaling, the department will be informed within 5 weeks through a Section 52 if jobs will be lost, but we have actually learned that the jobs will be saved. The only issue is the bank, as the business rescue practitioner has presented this morning. SLP 2 has been submitted, an assessment and approval is still pending. An audit whereby this non-compliance was identified, that was on the 2nd of March 2018, a contravention notice has been issued against the mine. On Shiva Uranium, labor and the union here that is actually responsible or in charge there is NUM. Has been engaged. Local authorities were met on the 5th of March 2018. Freiheit Revival Mines, engagements are ongoing between Idumbe Municipality, organized labor, and the department. At Optimum, the department met with the CEO of the company on the 21st of February 2018 after the Section 93 notices on Optimum and Brakfontein were issued. We must also put on record, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, that even the business rescue practitioners, the Minister did manage to have a meeting with them. The CEO requested the department to withdraw the notices. The department outlined clearly the processes that are going to unfold as a result of the non-compliance. The company further advised the department that Section 18 of LRA and Section 52 of MPRDA issued. Invitation has been extended to BRP, again Department of Labor, Competition Commission, and the MEC. The department shall further meet with the MEC to engage on the matter to ameliorate the impact. Safety performance at Optimum. We know that there are quite a number of issues that have been raised around this point, Honorable Chair. According to the records from the inspectorate, there were no fatalities at Optimum since March 2015. There were 13 injuries reported since 2016 to date. The mine has been issued with three Section 54 instructions in 2017, where the mine's operations were stopped. The last stoppage instruction was issued in September 2017. Condition of mine equipment or machinery. During the previous audits and inspections, there were no instructions issued for poor condition or non-compliance machinery. The department has not received any formal complaint on the condition of the machinery. The mine management will be required to present to the department a starter plan before full operations can commence if there was anything that was actually identified. In conclusion, Honorable Chair, the department will register as a creditor and continue its engagement with the business rescue practitioners. The department will continue to monitor and enforce compliance, and would also ensure as a department that all relevant stakeholders are engaged in this regard. Honorable Chair, there was a question that was raised earlier on by your good self in relation with the mining right. Who is the owner of the mining right? We can confirm that the mining right is still in existence. As you might be aware that the mining right shall only cease to exist if the company was liquidated. Now, because the company it is still under the business rescue, the mine is still valid. All the obligations that are to be performed shall be performed accordingly. Now, there is a question here or an issue around the Companies Act and MPRDA. As you are aware that the business rescue practitioner is appointed in terms of Companies Act, and we also have MPRDA that regulates the sector. Now, in this instance, it is evident that the mine right has been, or rights have been ceded to the business rescue practitioners to deal with all matters relating to the mine. I must also overemphasize this point, Honorable Chair, that I know that the issue of the clinic was raised as well. You have also deliberated around this matter. What you are going to do as a regulator would want to commit to honorable members that working together with the business rescue practitioners will ensure that all these issues of non-compliance they are attended to, including matters that relate directly to the employees at the mine. We know that there may be some impediments because we have different pieces of legislation that are governing us, but we have established a good working relations now because the minister has made it very clear that we need to work very closely with the business rescue practitioners. And so this is actually at the end of our presentation, and to confirm again, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, that in terms of engagements with relevant stakeholders, we are having a meeting tomorrow with the employees at Optimum, and we shall also ensure that we visit the clinic, and whatever that is outstanding, we working together with the business rescue practitioner, will make sure that those issues are attended to. I would like to thank you very much.
Okay, DJ. I thought you asked for additions, but I can say power unto you. Okay. Twengo mwanga lala. Honorable members, any questions? Clarities? Honorable Khawula, Honorable Lorima, Honorable Nyambi, who told you there will be a next round? I'm the chair. That could be the last time you are speaking if you were going to speak anyway. Baba Khawula.
Yes, Chair. You know, DG, thank you very much for the presentation. I know it's your prerogative that you can give this presentation alone without giving your fellow directors an opportunity to add. But you know, in the interest of good governance, it's always important to get a sense that indeed you're not just leading your jacket, you're leading with people. Probably it's a lesson for next time. It's important. I'm saying this because it has been one of my afterthoughts on the business rescue practitioners. We had to sit here and listen only to one man, and you realize later, I wonder what happened. It's like other people were just there as just formal stooges. I'm not extending that to you, but I'm just saying that you must avoid that perception from us to make that perception about yourself. The other thing, Chair, which I want to check, the department is saying to us that it has just learned, it was informed most recently about the issue of business rescue practitioners. So it has been informed almost the same time we got to know it. And I want to check what has been your own reaction to it. Because we have just heard here that the companies that have been put under business rescue practitioners, with all good purposes, they are profitable mines. They are profitable companies. But the only issue was the issue of the accounts from Borodo Bank, which could not be accessed. Now, I want to check from yourselves. Did you satisfy yourselves that indeed there was rationality to put that company, those companies, under business rescue? So I want you to check, to tell us your own understanding, that whether there was rationality and also your understanding of the process for those companies to be put under business rescue. We've heard here that it was a privileged network of an accountant, attorney, and then later to them, you see. So we want to check from you. Did you see anything? Were you taken aback by it? Or is it something that you had anticipated as a department that this company will be put under the business rescue practitioner? The other thing that came sharply, which we have raised, is the issue of optimum coal not complying with certain regulations. And amongst them, which we have raised here, is the issue of social labor plan. And the allegations that the BE certificates, which has not been proven. Now, I want to check from yourselves, because you're also lifting some of the non-compliance areas, you see. And I just want to check, because from what you are raising, you have been very much lenient, optimum cool. So if you can just tell us that if it is a standard practice to be lenient to a company that does not comply with the required regulations, you see, and whether on the issue of the allegations in relation to the BE certificates, is there some sort of investigation that the department as an authority is doing to verify if the allegations are true or allegations are false? So I think if you can just touch up on those. The last part is that I believe on 2016, the company, which is the reaction company, it wrote a letter to you in relation to the non-compliance of Optimum with regard to the social labor plan, which was specifically around the issue of clinic, which was never paid, up to a point that it even threatened to take the matter to the court. I believe at some point it had to go to court. I just want to check, because I see the letter was written on the 15th November 2016. Did you respond to it? Or did you make any commitments to ensure that you are going to accelerate the commitment of optimum to comply with this social labor plan. Yeah, if I can just pass there, Chair. Thank you very much.
I'm interested to know when the DMR first became concerned that these mines were not adhering to their commitments in terms of their license. That's a very broad question, but perhaps you can focus. Let's focus on the clinic at Optimum, just for a start. When did the department become aware that this clinic was not being complete, had not been opened on schedule? And can you explain why the department was satisfied with the explanation that there was a legal dispute? In general, on all these mines, I'd like to know when the first compliance notices were issued. From the time in Optimum's case, from the time of transfer from Glencore to Tegeta. When was the first notice issued there? I'd also like to know when other notices were issued. In fact, it would be very useful to have a timeline of every notice that was issued on every one of those mines, every compliance notice. The shortfalls in rehabilitation funds. Why were there shortfalls at Brakfontein and Idwala and Sheba? Why were they allowed to accumulate like that? During the period of ownership by Tegeta, how much money was transferred out of the rehabilitation fund for Optimum? I see the rehabilitation fund stands at, what, 1.6 or something like that? There have been various media reports that indicated the rehabilitation fund was worth a lot more money than that. Was it? And if so, why was money transferred out? It seems to me unusual for the DMR to give permission for rehabilitation funds to be transferred across to the company early. I'd like to know why this happened, and I want to know how unusual it is. I want to know specific examples where else this has been approved. And if it has been approved, I want to know in terms of what rule was the money allowed to be moved. There's some inconsistencies in what the DMR said previously. It's emerged in various court processes that in May 2016, early May, Tegeta wrote to the DMR asking for permission to access Kwinfontein rehabilitation funds. The then DDG said in principle that was going to be allowed. Again, I'd like to know why in principle this was allowed, and whether it actually happened, and whether that money was used for rehabilitation. This is particularly interesting because 4 months later, the DMR denied that Tegeta had asked for permission to access funds. Why was that denial made? From the presentation, I can see that it took 4 months before the DMR detected that the rehabilitation program was not taking place at Optimum. 4 months is quite a long time. Can you explain why? We heard a few times that the DMR launched investigations and then discovered that there was non-compliance on a number of issues. Can you explain why it takes an investigation has to be launched to find these things out? Isn't that a matter of course? That if compliance doesn't happen, it'll be indicated by regular inspections? You talk on page 21 about the SLP inspection at Brakfontein. Found a number of instances of non-compliance. When was the previous inspection at Brakfontein? And did the previous inspection not indicate that there was a failure to comply on all those issues? Page 22. Shiva was still implementing an old SLP. How come it still it was still implementing SLP 1 from 2011 to 2016? Tell me something about the 43 jobs that were cut at Shiva on or around the 20th of December last year. Did those retrenchments go through the correct processes, as far as the department is aware? When the regional manager first tried to issue notices against some of these mines, I'm talking about Mr. Chivandakano, I think his name is. Why did the department try to fire him? On page 24, we see the safety record at Optimum. Can you just confirm that those 13 injuries, none of them were due to either failures of equipment to be maintained properly or failures for the supply of adequate protective gear? You did say, DG, something about the mining rights having been ceded to the business rescue practitioners. I take it that's a temporary session? And do you expect, I mean, I'd like to know from the department side, what happens if the business rescue succeeds and the mines then get returned to their previous owners, Tegeta? Does Tegeta then get those rights back? And finally, a catch-all question, something that spans all of this. I'd like to know whether DG and any other official here, were any of you, or to your knowledge, any other officials, instructed to withhold, delay, or not issue any compliance notices in respect of any of these mines? And if you were given those instructions, by who?
Okay, Honorable Nyambe, can you hold on a bit? Those questions are so many. So I must give him a chance to so that they don't disappear. Let me give a chance for those questions to be answered first, and then from a chair I will consider what will be the next option. I'm sure though you have taken, I'm trying to relieve you from about 30 questions. I'm using my discretion to see when, how many are they. Okay?
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me clarify this point to Honorable Kawila. Kawila, yes, no, thank you. We work as a team. I don't have a monopoly over this process. And so the team has worked on the document, and so it's a collective effort. But I must welcome the questions that the Honorable Kawila has raised. Honorable Chair, because we have different officials that are responsible for various aspects within the department, I would like to give over to the acting TTG, and this should be followed by the Chief Director, Mary Boni, and also the acting Chief Inspector of Mines, assisted by the Director. Then other questions, if there will be any questions, maybe I can deal with those that can deal with them right now, especially the first questions. The rationale to put the companies under business rescue, as we are aware that it's a process that we don't have any control over it as a department, because they are using Companies Act for the appointment of business rescue practitioners. Mm-hmm. And so when this matter came to our attention, now we had to deal with it in accordance with MPRDA in terms of the obligations that the mining company or the business rescue must also comply with, which emanates from the right that was issued to the mining company. It's more of a session, but the responsibility and also the obligations will still be applicable depending on how the process is being undertaken by the business rescue practitioner. Because it was also raised that if it is not being managed very well, then it may lead to liquidation, and so that is a very bad. That would be a very bad situation that it leads up to a liquidation. Of course, the expectation will be that we must also be taken on board as and when these kind of decisions are going to be taken. And so in this instance, that did not happen. But we don't have any, control over this process. The business rescue practitioners are appointed independently from the department. On the issue of the BE certificate, I must actually indicate, Honorable Chair and also Honorable Members, that it's an allegation that we have also learned from the media. We would make sure that this matter is actually investigated. We can write to the chair to give the chair the response from the side of the department. As you know that we have the systems in place in the department where we assess whether the company is compliant or not. And so we can provide you with this information. I must also indicate, Chair, that Honorable Members spoke about the leniency on the part of the department. We have to be objective as and when we are required to deal with all these mining companies. And also Optimum is not an exception to this particular practice. It may appear perhaps that we are a little bit lenient, but the officials in the region, they have been doing their work, and we rely heavily on our officials from the regional offices to do their work. And so in this instance, recall of any instance that we applied some leniency rule in this particular regard. The issue of the clinic, I think the notification was on the 15th of November 2016, and the colleagues can respond to this question. But what I know is that this was not the first notice that was issued to the department by Mrs. White. I also had some interactions with Mrs. White in this regard. There is also a question that has been raised by Honorable Rorima in relation with the regional manager that was fired when he was going to issue a directive to the mine. I must say that because, this is a labor matter, but because it has been raised by the Honorable Member in this PPC, I will just deal with it quickly. It was not because the regional manager was going to issue a notice. That is why the notices in question have actually been taken through. The content is still the same. But I must indicate that this matter started last year of the regional manager. And so we have been looking for him. We couldn't find him. And so it happened that on that very same day he was at this mine. And so when the notice had to be issued, because it was after some, attempts by the Human Resource Department to locate his whereabouts. Then I think other questions, the colleagues will be in a position of assisting. Then I will just wrap up after they have responded, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much. With your indulgence, Honorable Chair, I would like to hand over to the Acting DDG. Thank you.
Good afternoon, honorable members, chairperson, colleagues. On the issue of what happens if the BRP succeed, does Tegeta get the mining right back? As the DG has already indicated that the company is not in liquidation as yet. So the mining rights as they are, they're still in the name of Tegeta and they're still owned by Tegeta through the process of the BRP. Only if we go to liquidation is then that the mining right will cease to exist and then revert back to the state. But for now, it will remain because the idea of BRP, like they explained in the morning, is to resuscitate the company. So there's that possibility that the company can get back to its own self and then operate whether with the new owners in terms of what the BRP explained in the morning. And then there was a question about when was the previous inspection in Brakfontein conducted. Brakfontein, it was a new application that was done by Tegeta Group of Companies, and in the normal course of events, when the mining right is granted, the company will have 12 months to start organizing themselves before they operate, and then only after that period is then that the department will then go and inspect the operations. And then in the normal course of event, the officials of the department will then conduct inspections just to go and check what is happening in those operations. And then on the questions, why should there be an investigation to detect the non-compliances? Is it not a normal course of events? It is a normal course of event. We're calling it an investigation. Maybe the wording was not correct, because we'll conduct an inspection. After the inspection, once we detect the non-compliances, and then we conduct what we called a full investigation in what exactly happened. So it's not like there'll be a specific investigation for a specific operation and not compliance inspection. So compliance inspection will happen during the normal course of doing our work. And then on the issue of which DG also touched on, when did the DMR become aware that the clinic was not complete, and why was the department satisfied about it? From what we explained on the presentation was that there were non-compliances that were detected, and then one of the issues that were raised then by the mine was that they have difficulty with their banking facilities. As a result, they're not able to release the funds to pay for the supplier to complete the clinic. I'll allow colleagues to assist on some of the questions. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, honorable members. Good afternoon, DG. Thanks, colleagues. I'm going to focus mostly on the Shiva Uranium related questions. The reason why the company has been implementing the social and labor plan up to 2016 is that the life cycle of a social and labor plan is 5 years. So it was approved first in 2011 up to 2016. Now we have been going back and forth with the company on the review of the social and labor plan. So even though they may not be having an approved social and labor plan, because a social and labor plan is a living document, once they submit a review of the SLP, which they've consulted with the municipality, we give them an in-principle go-ahead to proceed and implement whilst we are awaiting to finalize its approval. So those may be the circumstances around why you find that a company's social and labor plan has expired in 2016 and they are not yet formally onto the second generation or third generation of an SLP. On the issue of jobs in Shiva Uranium, the department was notified, the minister was notified, the board of the minerals board was notified through a Section 52 process. But I think it is quite important that honorable members take note of what the provisions of Section 52 require. They require that if a company is going to scale down 10% of its labor force or up to 500 employees, then they must follow the Section 52, and we must also bear in mind of the court judgment between National Union of Mine Workers and Sibanye as to which of between Section 52 and 189 comes first. But under the circumstances, due to the number of employees, the company only followed Section 52. On the issue of statutory instructions, we do have records of the instructions that we've issued regarding the financial provision, and they date back to September, October 2017, because the mines, they only acquired the mines only in 2016. So we have issued statutory notices. We're not reacting to the business rescue situation. And we can provide the details of such instructions. I think I've covered. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I would like to respond to two questions. The first one is with regard to when did the department issue the compliance instructions. As it was presented before, that as far as the health and safety inspectorate is concerned, we have issued three Section 54 instructions since 2016. And we can also provide the dates when those instructions were issued. And then the second question was the root cause of the different accidents. Chairperson, again, I don't have the exact causes or root causes of those accidents, but that information can be provided to confirm if that was due to lack of maintenance or the employees were not provided with the PPE.
Okay. No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Maybe to be specific to the other question that Honorable Lorima has raised, pertaining to whether the mines will return to Tegeta. I think this question was responded to by the BRP earlier this morning, Honorable Lorima, because it's a process that even ourselves as a department, we don't have a direct control over it. But then it has been indicated that there is quite a substantive number of interested, companies that have also raised their hands that they would want to buy these mines. There was also a question as to whether was there any instruction that was issued to the officials not to issue the instructions. As I have also indicated, that the regional offices, they do their work independently, working together with their chief directors, because they are responsible for the different regions. And so we have never issued any instruction to our officials not to perform their duties, because we expected to comply. I'm sure that is why we have also received a clean audit as a department. I think the question on the injuries, Mr. Zondi has touched on it in terms of the whether that was linked to the poor quality of the machines. I think it has been responded to. There is also a question, Honorable Chair. We can verify this question as to how much money was transferred. But we know that we comply with the prescripts. We don't do things outside the confinement of the applicable prescripts. And there was also a question as to whether Tegeta had access to the rehabilitation fund. Now, if then this was done, how it was done, and so we can respond to this question, because I thought that one of the chief directors will respond to it. We can respond to this question in writing, Honorable Lorima. I think, Chair, that's how we can respond to the questions that have been raised by honorable members. Thank you very much. Okay. Oh, yes, no, thank you very much. As I've said, that because I thought that they would deal with some of the questions, I've realized that they have omitted some of them. Everyone?
With regard to the notification in respect of transfer of environmental liability, when we received notification from Tegeta Resources on the 12th of February that the Bank of Baroda is pulling out from their financial provision, we wrote to, I'll speak particularly to the net, to the KZN and to the Northwest provinces. We wrote both back to the Bank of Baroda and to NetBank and the holders of the trust funds, and we made a request to them that they should transfer the financial liability that they are holding in cash into the department's bank account, and we can produce evidence to that effect. I think my colleagues can take over the Mpumalanga one.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just welcome the presentation by the DG. Although most of the questions have been asked by my other members, but there is one question that I want to ask. On page 18, under the intervention by the department, it says the company is still under 60 days period to make presentation to the department on how to remedy the non-compliance. I just want to know whether the company is still going to come to the department to make presentation, although there is a BRP on place. I just want to know that. Another thing, they said they've issued three Section 64 in terms of non-compliance. I just want to know how many to be issued so that a person can see that there is something wrong that he's doing, or are there any penalties that they are supposed to pay. Thank you.
Good. Thanks, Chair. That's one or two questions. So one thing that is not coming up clear from the department also is who is really having the right to put the company in distress under business rescue practitioner, especially if DMR also has no say or control on that. Also, I'm a bit confused, Chairperson, because in all these processes that are mentioned here, there is no mentioning of Tegeta as a company and the company that is presently owning the mining rights there. Also, Chair, besides that, the department is conducting the inspection in the mine in its in normal times. Do the department believe that it is having enough capacity to do that job or not? Thank you, sir.
Okay, now thank you very much, Chair. I'll give over to Mr. Zondi and Acting DG. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. With regard to the instructions that were issued, as it stated in the presentation, that we have issued three Section 54 instructions, and our Act also empowers our inspectors to issue what we call a Section 55 instruction, where the mine is required to, is compelled to comply with the Act or regulations or both. And over and above that, also an inspector can recommend that a mine be issued with an administrative fine up to a maximum of R1 million per offense. That means after an inspector has conducted an inspection and the mine's got more than one or two transgressions, an inspector decides to issue that mine with a fine, that means it will be sort of be issued per transgression, that R1 million fine, which is the maximum. And of that have that was all that was required.
Thanks, Chair. On the issue of what about the 60-day period, unfortunately, we were overtaken by events of the BRP process, as it was indicated in the morning by the BRPs. So what the DG has indicated is that we will continue to engage with the BRP on the process, because now they are the ones who are running the process in terms of the Companies Act. But however, we'll continue engaging with them. But under the normal course of event, had it not been for the BRP, we will follow the 60-day process, because the Act says you must give the holder a reasonable period to remedy the non-compliances. It will also depend on the kinds of the non-compliances or the extent of the non-compliances. And there was a question that who has the right to put the company under the BRP. From what DG explained also on our presentation is that the process is, and from what the BRP also explained in the morning, that the process is run through the Companies Act, but there's going to be consultation with us as the regulator of the right. And then there was also a question about the fact that Takeda was not mentioned. I'm not sure if I understood the question, but in our presentation, we had indicated that the Optimum Coal Mine is the holder of the mining right, which is currently owned by Takeda Exploration and Resources. And we've also indicated that some of the operation in the KZN are owned by Takeda. We have indicated Takeda as the owner of the mine somewhere in our presentation. Thanks, Chair.
There is a question also on capacity by the department from Honorable Jafter. We can confirm, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, that we do have the capacity to perform our duties as a department, but we cannot say that that is enough. And so, you know, the discussions that we are having on the other side in terms of resources and so forth that we need to also to get. But then for now, we can confirm that we do have the required capacity to do our work as a department. Now, as for the issue that has been raised, Chair, I think I just want to re-overemphasize this point of the appointment of a business rescue, because you also touched on it earlier as to who is eligible to appoint the business rescue. That could be a lacuna in our law, because as a regulator, we don't have those powers. They are with the Companies Act. Now, we are disempowered in the sense that we can't then advise. I mean, we can only be informed by a mining company that we are considering of appointing a business rescue practitioner, but there is nothing that we can do as a department, as a regulator in that regard. And so it's a matter that I think we would have a separate conversation around it, looking at our separate pieces of legislation. Thanks, Chair.
It's quite a few issues, Mr. Chair, but I wonder whether you would agree that what would be very useful to see would be From the period when Tegeta owned these mines, now I realize that there were different periods, but I would like to see, say, for the case of Optimum, from when Tegeta took over, for the case of Brakfontein and Kwinfontein, I'm not sure for how long Tegeta took owned those mines, but for the last, say, the previous 3 years, a list of compliance instructions that were issued by the department in any respect, safety, SLPs, anything, but what they were issued for and when they were issued, that would be most useful. Getting back to the clinic, I've got two answers now. So the first answer was, well, the clinic hasn't opened because there's a dispute with the contractor and we're waiting for the court to pronounce on this. And then the answer I've just got now is, no, they had banking problems. So what was the reason that compliance of this, of enforcing this clinic open, opened? What was the real reason? Or did the reason change? And if so, why did it change?
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me deal with the question of the clinic. There is a shortfall, that's what we can confirm. And out of our discussions with Mrs. White, the amount has also even gone high. I think it is now around 980,000 rand. Initially we gave a different figure, but we got a confirmation from Mrs. White that that figure has gone up. And so that's what we can confirm, Chair, that that was the impediment for the clinic not to be opened. As we have also made a commitment that working together with the BRP, we would make sure that all these issues that are still outstanding are attended to. I think that's what we can report on at this stage in regard with the clinic. So I see the Honourable Member is like it's not comfortable with the response. But then from our side, it is because of the outstanding amount that is why the clinic was never opened, Honourable Chair. Maybe, Raboni, can you deal with the other questions?
I think we can prepare a summary format where we show when did you conduct compliance inspections for the last 3 years, the type of notices that we have issued, and what was done following the notices that have been issued. I think we can submit that information because we do have it.
Thanks. That would be very useful, just clarifying the timeline of events. But sorry, just to come back to the clinic, DG, I still don't understand. Why did they not have to open the clinic? Was it because there was a court case, or was it because there was too much money owing and they said they couldn't pay because of the bank?
Thank you, Chair. We can verify this point, Honourable Member. But as I said, that it was because of the shortfall. That is why the clinic could not be opened. And also, as I have highlighted, that out of my conversation with Mrs. White, the issue is mainly around the shortfall. That is why the clinic could not actually be opened. And so the issue of the court case, and so it was never an issue according to the information that I have. Thanks, Chair.
Mr. Chair. Okay. I'm sorry, I have to take this up. I want to refer to a written question that I asked, which was answered on the 4th of August. I asked about the clinic. I said, why hasn't it opened? Why? What are the full reasons for the delay? Here's the response from the department. There is a dispute between the company and the contractor, and the department is awaiting the court ruling on this matter. Nothing about the money, nothing about the bank account. 4th of August last year. So, DG, what's the story?
Thank you, Chair.
As I've indicated, Chair, that we can provide a written response to this question to the Honourable Member, articulating all the facts pertaining to why the clinic was not opened. But the issue, based on our presentation, it was based on the shortfall. But we can provide a full response in this regard. Okay, can we do it like this? We will deal with the contradictions on the response. It's our duty. But there is commitment that is being made. I always say, don't want us to move away from the actual purpose of the meeting, so that we stick to the purpose of the meeting. If we feel that we have addressed the pressing issues, we then deal with that. But I'm sure that's why, for this time around, I gave NUM to be the last ones to make the 10 minutes presentations. The last time you were the first ones. Now you have seen what is being said. I will agree with one part, Honorable Norima. For me, it was a completely different matter. When I met with Labour, and now if you say that it has increased to 400,000, in my notes, it was saying 400,000, and it had more to do with an outstanding amount that the court had ruled on, and non-compliance. But the issue still remains that the business, this is, for me, that is why I say my focus should be on the fact that the main thing we wanted to establish, who will we hold accountable in the event these things don't happen? Now, the business rational practitioner has given us an assurance and even said the matter has been referred to their lawyers. They will come back and give us a response. What did the lawyers say? They gave us an assurance that in the event, because there's nothing more that we can, they gave us an assurance that in the event, when they pay, it is one of the areas that will get priority consideration. But we have a duty on the other side as a committee to establish the facts behind why we find ourselves in this situation. That is the other side that we will be dealing with. So, before we go to NUM, there is an issue for me, which is an accountability matter. And if NUM are misleading what was said, then you must tell me that I say something that was not said. Neither do I dispute what you say, Babu Zondi. There is a general feeling, let me put it like that, so that if I'm incorrectly placing it, there is a general feeling that when the inspectors or the regional office conduct its inspections, and which is what we may need to get proof. I don't know if there is a member who asked whether they have been given instructions. That one, tell me if this process is correct. When an inspection is conducted, somewhere, whether it's the chief inspector of mines or a responsible chief, what do you call, chief director, before the notice is, the compliance notice is duly authorized, it requires approval of a senior person at the head office. Let me put it like that. Now, the feeling then was that as long as it has not been duly authorized by a head office, that section, is it section 93, ne?
Yeah.
Eh? No, besides section 54. Is it
93.
Eh? Yes. That section 93 is as useless as if it doesn't exist. And in most cases, that's what was not being approved or authorized. So I'm trying to dramatize. You'll tell me from that. I go, is it for SLPs or whatever, the section 93. I go, I mark areas of non-compliance.
Then before it could, because I don't want us to go that route, because there is another process that we have to undertake, but with these answers, they may make us even ask more questions. Then the supervisor or the authority above me, as they say, you have chief directors for different reasons, will not approve or authorize that action, which then makes it to have no legal standing or enforcement authority to it. And listen to this, I said that's what seems to be prevailing in the discussions, especially with the trade unions, with NUM, to say, look, the department could be doing the inspections and finding what is wrong, what is right. But what the department doesn't find is that it requires an authority from head office, and that's the authority that we don't get. And I think that is the first thing. But linked to this, there is something in law, those that are lawyers. So that we can get this sense, there is a general belief that there have been many inspections that have been conducted. In fact, put it the other way around, the business rescue practitioner was here, ne? Saying exactly the same thing that I heard from the union, both the last time they were here, last week, Wednesday, and also Monday when we met with them, to say the problem that is happening is that when it comes to the equipment, first they raise the issue of protective clothing, which the BRP also confirms. Then they say when it comes to the equipment, which is very critical, which is why, Babu Zondi, the answer that you give may be very problematic for a committee that has to take a decision. It then says there is a movement, that I'm using a very polite word, there is a movement of repair material or equipment taking from this plant because the condition is not good, take it to the other plant, and so forth and so forth. Now the question arises, if, for instance, DG says we do have enough capacity, why it could be traced or be confirmed or be stated by the business rescue practitioner, be traced by the unions, but it doesn't appear on the report of the department? When the answer must be given, then it says, now we have to go and check what were those areas of compliance. They are very clear. I'm not talking about something, except if I recorded, then we look at the minutes. It's very clear the BRP says what was happening here when it comes to protective clothing. There was a problem that there was not sufficient, or there was at some point none of protective clothing. I don't know, maybe in the meeting between the unions, then they colluded to say the same statement. Two, the same thing that the union said is what the business rescue practitioner, it says there was poor maintenance of the equipment to a point that instead of taking money, that's where that issue of the diversion of money came in, instead of taking money and plowed back in improving and servicing the equipment and the material, the money was diverted to somewhere else, which is now their focus. Now you've got a department that is supposed, okay, the simplest question, why the department could not detect that? Or put it the other way around, can the department confirm what the two, okay, hopefully anyone won't come here and then change the statement. But I'm still holding the old one, the old two ones you made, which are similar. Because the issue we must understand, and I think What will be problematic is to deal with something and then we find ourselves compelled to dig and dig and dig, and to a point where instead of dealing with questions of clarity, we end up saying, no, maybe the information we are given is not sufficient enough. It requires. That is the second thing. But quickly, the last issue is that this one, DG, will fall unfortunately on your shoulders. Here is the company. I now want to put myself on the shoes of the company. Here is the company. It doesn't have a banking facility. And I said, regrettable, I don't think, I know we may differ by your opinion on this matter. Surely when the decision was taken of closing, even myself, by the way, I never knew, and I always say this thing, when the MPRT, I think Honorable Loremo is still here in Matlalas, they saw it, they passed it in the eve of us coming to Parliament. And when we come in, I just saw it on TV, people fighting, why are you rushing this thing and so forth. The next thing, when I'm a chairperson, first item on the agenda is the MPRTA. I can count many of these things. You see them at a distance, you never suspect one day they'll be in your doorstep. Mm. When I saw this thing of the banking facility, little did I know that one day I'll be sitting here talking about the freezing of the bank accounts. Yeah, but now the reality is like, when death is far away, when people say there's listerias, we can make a joke about it, but the day somebody dies at your house, you will then start to see how serious is this disease. Whatever, nobody listening, nobody, oh, person got busy in your cup, so I'm contributing a formal. You know, now, but the point I'm trying to say is that here is a, I'm not talking about what you do, what is it. Generally, let me put the other way around. What that business rescue practitioner is doing, one may argue and say, this is what the department should have done. Together with the creditors, and in this case, together with workers. You see, not for them to motivate for someone to get a life, but to say, what are the implications if this thing, which is what I was asking the business rescue practitioner, what if you don't get a banking facility? Probably you may not be here. We'll be talking something different. Maybe they would have asked even Mr. Luzipo to, in the meantime, stand in with his bank account. I can only decide the percentage interest on what they used my account for. But I'm just saying, there could have been negotiations that says, like you said now, hey, can you bring the money closer? Because the others are leaving. So we want to have the rehabilitation fund being returned back to sit with NetBank. It could have been an arrangement like that one to say, look, we want to stand as a guarantor that whatever that goes through, it will go under your scrutiny and you can verify with us. I'm just being hypothetical. Because now we're sitting, had we had that kind of an arrangement, I'm sure we wouldn't be having this kind of investigation. But you can never take the last issue. The last issue. Maybe you may not answer it now, but I will find it very odd if you don't have. Can you give us a percentage degree of compliance with the SLP? Obviously, you'll tell me how you calculate. I'm saying this is a company that had promised the community of Hendrina. And what is that place? I know they gave me is it Hendrina and Zamogushi. Yes. What I realized was that at all these times when these things were happening, non-compliance with the clinic, non-compliance with the electrification, non-compliance with water, and so forth and so forth. There is nowhere where the department is being mentioned. Now, the dam purification, that's what they said. The municipality said we had to, on their own, now let's be honest, on their own, they had to make a deal with the service provider when it comes to water. That instead of paying the company that used that had an agreement with on the payment of water. I think at some point it went up to 950 and so forth. When they were paying, they realized that the managers they continue to pay was not going to the service provider. Hence, they had to strike the deal with the service provider to pay direct. Now, the question arises, where are you? Where were you?
Thank God.
Linked to this is the last question. We see everything that is happening here, but you have not told us, which is linked to the first one. What have you done, or why? If the department has got capacity and everything, why do we find ourselves here now? I agree with you, DJ. Simplest thing is that I've always said that yes, when you do things, but you know now you are gonna to some degree. As I said, my mind is working to say, what sometimes we might be avoiding, we might be compelled to do day by day. We learn to now prescribe, because this thing of ticking the box, you see, doesn't work. We just tick the box. I agree with you 100%. That's why I said at some point, the decline in fatalities is a good thing. But at times it doesn't tell us why we can't have zero fatalities. Because you may find that and find that there are key culprits or key habitual criminals, if you want to say. That's what sometimes the law says. Frequent sinners that can make the whole system not to be as perfect as we want it to be. So please, in the final question, it will be nice to sit here. I take the point, which I think you will leave it for another day or another forum. I take the point that the regional manager may not have been found, disappeared, maybe was not at work, but was eager to go and give a notice, compliance notice. Then that's when he gets the letter. But what then becomes the follow-up? And at least you know me now. I don't want, when I die, I've got things that were sitting in my chest. No, I'm not going to die. I'll be the last one to live. I want to be honest. And please, if I know sometimes I say things, then in the corridors, people start to say, oh, there's this. Well, I'll rather live with a free conscience than to hide something, because there's going to be a different thinking why I'm asking this question or why I think so. Let me be honest, what complicates matters on the issue of Mpumalanga, a regional manager, I don't know, maybe you can confirm, but I don't think we'll discuss it here. What complicates matters is that MUM, you see, I'm sorry, Manning and Accuse, you are the ones who have been coming and saying, no, in that meeting on Monday, which is not going to make things easy, is that they said you can confirm it. By the way, you are talking about a regional manager who was dismissed or suspended, whatever the case it is. He has won the case. The court has brought him back to work. Now, you have someone who was going to do this. You see, you are talking to ignorant people. Now, and the problem with an ignorant person is that he can take you to where you don't wish to go. Now, you are talking to someone who's sitting there says, oh, this regional manager was doing his job, I assume it's a he, was doing his job. Instead of being complimented, the bigger crisis was him, more than what he was dealing with at that moment. I'm just making an example. I'm not saying, it's just a question, is it true that that regional manager has been reinstated by the court? It's another matter whether you appeal or you don't appeal. I know some of these things. So that we can also deal, so that we don't come here and talk about someone who's dismissed and then MUM come and say that thing. They said they are not ancestors, they will say it again if they want to come here. But that is not the debate today. That's an operational issue, a labor-related matter. But I'm saying, what could be complicating matters now is that to hold their view tight, that they are correct on their own suspicion, is that that regional manager has been reinstated by the court. So that no one lives here with a doubt that I can tell you now, DG, all of you, I'm that type of a person who doesn't have a no-go area, no territory. One of the most dangerous things is when you allow rumors and lies and everything to be spoken in the corridors. This is what becomes the truth. Even if we talk on the corridors now, anything, at least we must know the facts and the truth here. Okay, can you answer?
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I will start with the very same last questions. Chair, we can confirm that the judgment was issued on Friday on the regional manager, and he has been reinstated. I can also confirm to the PPC that he has also been part of the people that prepared this document. He was in my office because we don't take things personally. I mean, if there was a decision that was taken, because we are dealing with employees, and so there is nothing personal. And so he was even in my office even yesterday, working together with him. As for whether the intention to appeal the decision, Chair, I don't think that we would actually appeal the decision. So we just need to, you know, make sure that the work of the department is being done. We don't get embroiled in court cases. Then the other questions, Chair, I think especially for the inspectorate, I think we've raised quite critical questions. We also had some deliberations around these issues. The chief, acting chief inspector should be able to respond to these questions pertaining to the protective clothing and also, you know, the strategy that has been applied of taking equipment from one mine to the other. Should be able to deal with it. But the other issue, Chair, you know, with the limited resources that we are having, we need to make sure that we are able to honor our obligations. That's how we can respond to the issue of capacity. You have quite eloquently raised this issue. If then you have capacity, why this happened and so forth. But we are saying that with the resources that you are having, and of course they can't be enough, but we can't keep on complaining that we don't have enough resources. But then the obligation on us is that with the little resources that you are having, we must make sure that our constitutional mandate and also our responsibility or obligations in terms of the MPRDA are ultimately honored. But it's a matter that we'd also have a conversation around it with you on a later stage, Honorable Chair. Mr. Zondi, other questions?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. With regard to the issuing of instructions, I'll briefly explain the process we follow in the department. Is that after an audit on inspection, an inspector can issue an instruction. And that instruction is also countersigned by management and health and safety rep. And issue that instruction before he leaves the mine. Right? And thereafter, the principal inspector is expected either to confirm or set aside that instruction. So, I mean, if the principal inspector at that stage decides to change the instruction, to set it aside or amend it, already that instruction is issued and given to the mine. That is a separate process. And we've got a track and trace of those instructions are issued to all the mines. And if there's a concern that at a later stage these instructions are not confirmed or set aside, we can be able to audit the whole process of us issuing those instructions to the mines. There's a process we follow in the department. And the second question was a concern on the PPE. Like we said earlier on in the presentation, is that as far as we're aware as the department, we're not aware of any shortage of PPE, right? But what might happen is that when our inspectors go to the mines, right, they are provided with the adequate PPE. But it might happen that when employees go there to get their PPE, they're not issued with their PPE, and we're not aware at that point in time. That's why all the time when we do our inspections and audit on the mines, we're always accompanied by health and safety reps, right? But obviously, if those issues come to our attention, we'll take appropriate action as a department. And again, we cannot stress that one enough, that if these things we become aware of, we'll be able to take appropriate action on them. Again, similarly, with regard to the maintenance of equipment, it hasn't come to attention yet that there this specific problem comes to the maintenance of equipment. But obviously, going forward, due to the information that has come to our attention, we'll be focusing more now exactly on their maintenance plan, specifically at Optimum and their other mines. Because this information now has brought to our attention that they tend to rotate, I'm assuming, some of their equipment. So we'll be doing more focused inspections going forward to address this particular issue. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
TDG, the degree of non-compliance with SLPs?
Thanks, Chair. DG, I think at this stage, maybe it's an information that we can provide later once we consolidate all and then start looking in the numbers and come up with a percentage, if that is allowed.
How?
Without necessarily following up on, it's just an observation, Chair. I think there's quite a number of those that were promised to have them sent returnly. You see, it's quite a disappointment, Chair, because you can't have, you will think that issues that lead to compliance will be at the fingertips of the management. And that does not only apply to it, it applies to also other questions which have been asked. But also what I wanted to follow up on with the question which you asked, Chair, I want to know the status now, the status of the mine that was issued with non-compliance by that regional manager, which is basically the causal link between his dismissal and his serving the non-compliance order. What is now the status of that particular mine? You see, is that order still active or has it been revoked? Because it's clear from what transpires that the manager was dismissed because he served a company that he was not expected to serve with non-compliance, a company that was expected to be lenient to, and the manager decided to serve it because it was not complying, and hence he was dismissed and later reinstated by a court. Now, I need to know, it's very important, what is the status? I know the status of the manager, that the court has reinstated him. What is the status of that company in terms of compliance that was served? Was the company was served with non-compliance, and also it was non-compliance in terms of also environmental regulations. So I just want to check, what is the status? Has it been revoked, or does the company remain served with that non-compliance?
Okay, DG, I'll come back. Yes.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I just want to clarify this point, Honorable Chair, that there is no causal link between the dismissal that was issued to the regional manager in this instance, Honorable Member. It was a process that was started, I mean, even before, because we did not have a plan that he would be visiting this mine on this particular date. But what we have confirmed in this meeting is that the Human Resource Division has been looking for him. Now, it happened on that particular day that he was visiting the mine, and so perhaps it was unfortunate that he was going to the mine. Let me also confirm that, Honorable Chair, I think it is also on record that there was a media inquiry on this particular question. The content of the directive that the regional manager issued was never amended. And so that's what we can confirm. And this issue, it remains the same, and the mine still has to comply, Honorable Member. And so now we have a business rescue, in place. We'll make sure that whatever that, as per the directive that issued by the regional manager, things have been done properly. But we have been, actually, I think the DDG has also indicated this, that we have been overtaken by the fact that there is a business rescue practitioner that has been appointed. But because we're having some relations with the business rescue practitioner, we'll make sure that all these issues are being attended to. Thanks, Chair.
Okay.
Being alerted, I hear the cries. No, pal. If I had known, I thought I must start with those ones we didn't start with last time. Now, either you were not briefed properly, and even those that we met with, they didn't brief themselves properly too. But because I'm a fair chairperson, I will do my level best and take the punches from my colleagues. NUM says they've got a flight that they must catch very early. I've not finished with the department, and I will explain why. But let me be fair so that we hear them, even if they leave one person after that. But I did, Nopala, tell your delegation when we met that we have dedicated the whole day up until 6 o'clock. They are very much aware. Up until 6 o'clock dealing with this issue. Because we don't want to see workers tomorrow who will come and say, when we have problems, Parliament failed us. And by that time, they will be sitting outside. I can request in the meantime, but if you want to present where you are, you can, but at least you can come closer because people have started to move out in installment, only. To give you your 10 minutes so that you can be able to. If I could negotiate, I was going to say, at least because Nopala is here, he can duly authorize the manager to keep one or two, and I hope NUM still has got a white ticket, which is flexible. But let me give you NUM.
Yeah, Chairperson, let us take this opportunity to thank you and the ministerial committee team members. We are not going to follow the presentation as it is, because when we prepare the presentation, one, we then learned later that the liquidation process has been withdrawn because there was a settlement. And we were then raising issues that were part of that. But one, let us raise the issue to say we make an observation that there is a coincidence in the manner in which the issue of how the DMR dealt with the regional manager came to be. To us, it's coincident in the sense that the CEO of the company threatened the manager before he get the letter. On the very same day, the regional chairperson of NUM was with the manager. In that meeting, the CEO threatened the manager first. Now, when the manager go out of the operation, he then get the letter, and the letter was not hand delivered. Now, the manner in which the letter was sent, even when the manager was not visible, it was supposed to have been sent in that manner because it was not by hand, it was electronic. Now, why the department did not send the letter? Because this is their employee. Now, and I will take it that is a manager whom the department has given the cell phone. So there is no way that when they want their own employee, they may struggle because they've got equipment that they can track him. And to my best knowledge, they are using the very good equipment like iPhones that they can track the manager where he is. I want to say to it that we start to doubt you. And if your credibility is going to be doubted as the DMR, you are going to have a problem. Because no stakeholder is going to trust you. So we don't want to go deeper on what you are saying, but the discrepancies in your presentations make us to doubt. You know, we are a trade union that works in the mine. There are problems, Chairperson. And you can't miss the point. At some stage you can say, this department is corrupt. They are either taking bribes or something is wrong there. But let us assure you that the manner in which the CEO was so confident, he was so confident because by then the minister was a person that was to give you instruction. Maybe it was time to tell the truth that you were working under pressure, you were given these instructions because you wanted to save your jobs, you were just complying. Rather than come and tell us that we something that we doubt. We are doubting what you are saying, and what you are saying to us is not true. Because we want to assure you that there is a coincidence of the CEO of the company who threatened your employee. And I take it that as the department, under the circumstances that your inspectors and your managers are working, you are the first people that must protect them. Because they are working in areas that are dangerous. You know, when you have companies like this Tegeta, the mafia company like this one, now you can imagine that if your employees are not protected, if your employees can be threatened by employers for them to do the job, and when the employers threaten them, you do what the employers are threatening your employees. So it leaves much to be desired. And it has come to a stage where as a trade union, we will raise this issue to say this department needs to be overhauled. And let me raise this thing, Chairperson. This department was good. Let me raise this. This department was one of the good departments. As NUM, we worked with this department for many years. We can make you an observation that this department had a very serious problem when Museveni's one came to it. Majority of the managers or senior people in that department in Pretoria, you will then learn that they left that department after when he then came there. And I can tell you, if there was a department that we trust as NUM, that was DMR, because when we have problems, we were then to just take a phone call, raise issues, have an agent meeting, deal with the matters. In essence, even employers were knowing that if there is a way that these people will deal with you, NUM, if it raises concern, obviously DMR is going to come and deal with you. And we were working harmoniously. But after this man came, and good riddance, he's gone, there was problems. Management were happy that when you raise issues, they think you are just playing because there is no way where you will run. They know they have captured. If to me, if you can ask, I will say that this department was captured and highly captured. So that one we can confirm. We are a trade union. We are there. We were there. But our fear is, and we want to raise it in front of management, if the appointment of majority of these senior managers were appointed because of the behavior of the minister, it means we have got a problem in this department. If they were not employed based on competence, but they were employed because they were to comply with anything that the minister was to say to them, so that they must cover up. If you look at the situation of this command, you will make an observation that there is a lot of cover up. That is why some of the questions that are asked, you can't get ready-made answers. For example, you ask simple questions. When was this Section 93 orders given? The answers are not forthcoming, and the perception is they've been done now, most of them, because there was pressure. The reason why I thought if the BRP people were here, the reason why Optimum was problematic, we were then to tell them why Optimum is problematic compared to the other operations. In other operations, these problems just came. In Optimum, in 2015, we then dealt with Section 189, workers were reduced. And then after that reduction is when then Degeta bought this mine. And then after they bought the mine is when we then experienced a lot of problems, that there is a lot of collaboration between the department and this company. The compliance issues are problematic. Is the reason why everybody in Optimum is so skeptic, is having a fear, because the fear there is that was one of the big operations. It was an operation that was big, and now it's a lean operation, which naturally, in terms of minerals and others, was supposed to be a big one. So everybody is afraid of his security, of job security. So that is the reason why workers in Optimum, they are so vigilant, if you can put it that way, compared to others. Because with others, maybe the road that they've traveled compared to Optimum is different. So with Optimum, we have got an experience of that operation, and we understand why the workers there are difficult and problematic in approach. But we also see business rescue as problems to us, because we thought they are just in the pocket of the employer. They are not going to assist us anything. So the issue of the business rescue to us is the fact that, yes, they were appointed, but in many times, and we raised this issue with the employer, in many times we are given an opportunity, we are consulted, we are given an opportunity that we can also make recommendations of who must be the business rescue that must then be appointed together with the ones that were appointed by the employer. Because if only the business rescue are the ones that are appointed on the application, and with this one, I'm sure the application, we will all agree that it is an application that has got question marks. Under any normal circumstances, directors of the company will make a resolution, and out of that resolution, they accompany an application, and that is how then the business rescues are then get appointed. In these instances, many questions were asked. Who are the directors of this company? And the answer came very clear that it was not the directors that made a resolution, that made an application. So it was somewhere, somehow, and the suspicious things that we're asking is, this company is in Mpumalanga. The nearest places is Gauteng, which is Pretoria and Johannesburg, where there is a lot of business rescue, but everything comes from a province with a surname, Chairperson, and we're not talking that you also come in that province, but I'm sure you will see the role that your province is playing, that the person that applied for them to be appointed is from that province. The business rescued, in our knowledge, they also come from that province. But they are dealing with an issue that is far, that it needs an aeroplane to go and deal with it there in Emalahleni. And to us, that becomes suspicious. That's the other thing. The other thing that we also are suspicious of, Chairperson, but we'll raise some of these concerns. We'll have a meeting with the business rescuers to raise also this concern. It seems they may prefer a company that in our own investigation, the VR laser that they raised, the son of Ajay Gupta is a director in that company. Now, if they are going to give the company to VR laser, so to us, it's moving the company from a dented company, Tegeta, to a clothing company, or the company that we don't think is a guru in terms of mining. So we do have, to our knowledge also, we do have miners that are reputable, that has got interest. But like in the past, when Tegeta was also appointed there, we can confirm, I was part of the process, because it was under Section 189 with the DMR. By then it was that other DMR. It was not this DMR. What we have made an observation is that of all those people who have got an interest, ESCOM and the company had an interest on the head, and we realized that it becomes difficult because we wanted to save jobs of 500 and something. Even though we had to raise concern about Tegeta, we never had a lot of issues because we have realized that we have already lost some of the employees under Section 189 and we are on the verge of losing another 500. Then we accepted. But we can confirm that there were companies that are reputable, that are miners in this country, that if they took that company by then, we were not supposed to be where we are today. But we are regretting on the fact that we had pressure, we have made some observation that it seems this company is channeled. That's why the minister even went overseas to go and convince Glencore that really, really they must accept that Tegeta must be the one that buys. And by then, because he has got power and all this, we made an observation that really Tegeta is the one that is going to take over. When the Competition Commission asked us questions, we don't realize that when we lose, the workers lose the jobs, we are going to be named that NUM is the one that objected the process. Therefore, your member, their members are then retrenched and therefore they were negligent. But we are raising this issue now that if the company is going to be taken to VR laser, we can confirm that this is the same company. And if it's the same company, our question is there banks that are going to have the knowledge and accept the very same company? Because to us that is the concern. But Chairperson, let me say up to so far, I'm sure we can see the light in the tunnel. When we raised the matter with the portfolio committee, we really wanted the portfolio committee to run with a speed, assist us, and we can confirm that we are satisfied that you really met our interest, that you ran with this matter on the speed, and we are confident that if really the business rescued can be captured, this process may be managed and be resolved within a short period of time as compared to the others. Because what is interesting here is we are not dealing with companies that are beyond repair. We are dealing with companies that are still productive. We are dealing with companies that can be rehabilitated very quickly. We are dealing with the companies that can do everything. The only problem that we foresee that needs to be managed by the DMR, if they can, we are doubting, is, but we, as we are saying, we'll also raise it with the Competition Commission if it comes to push on the issue of the process. To us, here is to get a reputable miner, a company that is a guru in mining, that has got an interest that must take over. If that process can go there, in my view, our view as NUM, this process can take time. It's a process that before the end of this month, we may know that this is the preferred company. It has proven that it's a seasonal company that can run the mine. And if it is given that business, within a short period of time, it is a matter of Section 11. And I will take it that the DMR really understand the pressure that we are. They also can't just take their time, that they must be given a bribery first before they issue Section 11. They will then understand that here is no long is not their time of getting anything. It's just a matter of saving the job. Those ones, if they get them, they can do them in other businesses that are not in hurry. But this one will then be in hurry that you don't need anything to issue that Section 11. And if they issue the Section 11, the company is taken out of the business rescue, and the company is taken out of the gator, and that company can operate, those companies can then operate with the new owner. So to us, that is the issues that we think it will be a case that is being resolved very quickly, because the problem is not like others of business rescue. Here, there is money, there is production. And Chairperson, we don't want to waste your time, as we also have a pressure of time. But we just wanted to thank the committee that we are satisfied with the process up to so far. We know there is a problem that we have got outstanding debtors, our workers are at risk, our members are at risk, but we think that we can monitor and assess the risk that where they are, and in comparison of what we see out there, we can then say that I think it is a risk that if everybody is going to be serious, like the BRP said, they want our support, we will have a meeting with them and confirm that we will support them. But they must also promise us that they are not a statue of anybody. They are here to resolve the problem, not to accumulate a lot of money. When the trunk is full, it's only when they can say we are going. But only to find that by then, there is a pile of problems. The mines can't be operational. They've been dented. They've been damaged. And because they got the money, is then they can say, we want to sell to everybody. And everyone can say, no, we are no longer interested. This mine is no longer a mine. It's a dead body. And in many times, let us tell you what we have then experienced. Many times when a mine go to a business rescue, investors hold themselves. Then they will know it's going to fail. They leave it to go to the liquidation. In the liquidation, it's like buying cattle during drought. They are lean, they are cheap. Now, even in this, our experience is that many investors don't like to buy companies during business rescue. They want them to go to liquidation, because in liquidation, they are no longer liable for anything. So it is easy, it's cheaper. And we were holding our breath about this liquidation issue. And our prayers has been answered that the matter has been resolved. We did not want the liquidation process, because we know at the liquidation, we will no longer have a member. Technically, there will be no license, there will be no nothing. So the person who takes, he just takes a business and he can put a price that he wants, no negotiation. If you don't want, it's a matter of, if you don't want, I will leave. And they know if they leave it for a month, 2 months, as a mine, a business like a mine, really it will be even more cheaper. So, but we are saying that I think our breath is now nice. We can sleep with an understanding that it is now upon the regulators and everybody to manage the process. And if well managed, we are sure that we are not going to lose the jobs compared to where we come from.
You have represented them all.
No, we will never. We will never finish. Otherwise, if we finish, it means we must take the certificate back to the Department of Labor that we're finished to being a trade union. We're finished everything that is a problem. So problems you can't resolve. We can't resolve them. But we are saying, for today, where we are. That is why we were saying. Where we are today, we are satisfied with the process and we are just encouraging everybody to hold hands and with the hope that if really we can manage this process, we will do. But we want to encourage the DMR. We will call a meeting with the DMR, raise whatever we want to raise with them. We think there is a lot that we will raise with them and if possible jointly deal with them and give them information where we believe they are not doing the job in certain mines, and we are not going to wait for either these type of things to happen before they are then seen doing the job, because we will tell them where we are not satisfied and where we are satisfied.
Okay, thank you, Nopal. Any ticks or okay?
I thanks, Chair. I don't want to delay the committee, but I wish the business practitioner was here. Because as we're sitting here, I was wondering that the business practitioner was saying he wants to make sure that that mine is running. Chairperson, as we're sitting here, that mine doesn't operate. Why? Because for that mine to operate, you must have explosives where you are able to blast coal. I've been in contact with the members down there. There's no explosives, and that has been happening for the past 3 weeks. And if that doesn't happen, if there's no explosives to blast coal, then that mine won't operate. Secondly, you've got a number of machines that are unoperational. Instead of machines that are 13 that were supposed to be working, you've got 5. Instead of 5 that were supposed to be working, you've got only 1. So the situation that you are facing is that by the time this whole process comes to an end, you find out there's nothing left. The other issue that is a concern to us is that the business practitioner said he's involved in 8 operations. Bearing in mind we are dealing with this company called Together with his own reputation, the business practitioner, will he be capable enough to see to it that equipment aren't been moved, aren't been taken out during night, and then by the time he gets there, there's no work. For instance, the business practitioner, since he was appointed, he was at Optimum once. And things are happening there. Legally, as you have said, that he's now in charge. But you find out the very CEO that has mismanaged that company is the one that will be running that company. And anything can happen with that operation, and then there's no operation by the time this whole process finished. I thought, let me just add that. Thanks, Chair.
I just wanted to add to what he said, just in a broader perspective. In terms of the Companies Act, business rescue is designed for rehabilitations of companies that are financially distressed. I mean, this is a point that was canvassed too much during the proceedings this morning. But broadly, the concerns that we have as the union as well is the fact that this process is usually abused by business rescue practitioners themselves. Most of them, they use it as a delaying tactic to strip the assets of the company and then at a later stage put the company in liquidation when they know very well that the employees will not get a decent dividend should the company be liquidated. So this is the issue that I want to put before this House, so that as a collective, we should be able to deal with it. We should be able to avoid this kind of eventuality at the later stage. So I just wanted to put this before this House, just on a broad sense, because we won't be able to go through the entire presentation that we had prepared due to time constraints.
Chair, I don't know, man. Maybe it was I'm not sure if it was because the presentation we got from business rescue practitioners, it gave us a sense that there is a participative, if there's such a word, participative consultation between, in fact, the business rescue practitioners was raising a point that they are consulting with all stakeholders. And I think they kept on emphasizing on the cooperation of labor. And then you get a sense that the labor was very much comfortable with the process. But it seems as if that is not the case. If we can just get clarity on that, on whether, what form of participation are they making presentations or submissions to them. And also, I also want to get a sense from them. I hear the last point that is made by OCC there, that what is their own understanding on the rationality of business rescue process there in the company? Was it it's a question that I've asked the management, but I want to ask the labor as well. Do they think that it was a necessary process? Because we are raising this point because the only thing that seems to have led to the intervention of business rescue practitioners is the frustration of the company in terms of accessing its funds from the Bank of Baroda after NetBank had closed. So we just want to check as well, so that we are aware if the whole thing of business rescue practitioners is one of the ways of looting. If it is a looting process, tell us, you see, so that we know if there is any means to arrest it from when it is starting, we're able to do that. Because the whole point of having a business rescue practitioner is when you have proven on balance of probabilities that indeed the company, you want to save it before it gets to the process of liquidation. The other point I want to make, Chair, I think it was Piers Mustin in the one of the rescue practitioners on Optima, specifically on the issue of Eskom. One of the points he made in relation to Tegeta, transaction of Tegeta and Optimum, he made an observation that, or he made an observation of the advance payment and this, on the public reporter, and the public report on the state capture established that out of the transaction that's related to Tegeta and Optimum, there was some sort of a prima facie evidence that there was a corruption involved in there. I'm saying it because of that statement, further it referred to Tegeta and Optimum. And I just want to check from the side of labor, because there are stakeholders that are there, if they could observe, if they could say that they have observed any practice of corruption. The last point I see that you are the ones that are defending the manager of Mpumalanga than the management that is supposed to be the colleagues of the Mpumalanga manager. What's happening here? We just want to check. Are you the friends of the regional Mpumalanga management? Mm-hmm. On what basis? Or is it a basic, it's just a basic fair labor process that you are following? Or is there anything that links you to him against his principles? Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we've had wildly differing views on what happened with regard to the regional manager. I don't think we can just let it lie. I'm not sure how we take the process forward. It does reflect on the credibility of the department if they're not correct. It does seem odd to me that the attitude of the DMR towards the regional manager is that they're trying desperately to fire him. They fire him, they lose in court, and all of a sudden, coincidentally, the minister has changed, and then their attitude is completely different. I don't buy it. As I say, I'm not sure, Mr. Chair, how we follow that, but I think we should. And if I could also just make one final request, and that is that that list of notices served, can we have a date by when we'll get it?
We'll come back to the department. We're not finished. We're just dealing with NUM. Can you answer NUM?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the reason why I raised that issue is because we are particularly discomforted by the manner in which the business rescue practitioners elected to share their information in a partial manner. Currently, as we speak at the mine, the members are already experiencing some problems. The company is deducting UIF pension funds from members and medical aid, and it is not being paid to the schemes. However, when the business rescue practitioner represented this morning, he said the reason for placing that business under business rescue is solely because of a lack of transactional banking facility. He did not mention anything about financial difficulties or financial constraints. So that is why we are saying the reasons for putting the company and the business rescue better be genuine for the benefit of our members.
Yeah, I think some of the questions is that maybe by nature we are a trade union, and when we see a committed servant of the department doing his job, but instead of him being congratulated, but we see the employer conniving with the employers that he must work with. I think as a trade union, it also becomes our responsibility, because one way or another, he's an employee, and we then felt that this is totally unfair. And we want to be honest with you that working with inspectors and managers, we can make an assessment and tell even the department that this one is working and this one is not working. And our disappointment is to see either an inspector or a manager who's working that he must be dealt with. And those that we know, they are either not working or they're taking bribery, because you'll never see them. Even when they can come to the mine, it's like they never came. There is no problem with them. So we are not a friend to the manager, but as a union, we are satisfied. And let us maybe assure the committee that in many times, some of the inspectors or the DMR go to a mine when we will have raised a concern and a complaint. And that is the reason why when they go to mines, we in many times know in time that they will go there, because either members will have reported unsafe acts at the mine, we will have reported those acts, and when they go, we will see actions, and then we will know that what we have reported really has been taken into account. So the NUM in that province or in that region can attest that when they raise issues, that manager will take the concerns that they are raising within a short period of time. Either himself or the inspectors will go to that operation and they will execute what will have been reported there. If NUM or whoever organization can't report some of these things, they will never happen, because going to the mine, they may even go there, and the mine can take them to directions where they know there is no problem. So many times they go there with a tip that the areas that are problematic are in this area. In many times when we meet with the CEO, and that is a secret, they are saying, hey, NUM, you are killing us, because we know that these inspectors, when they come, they've got a tip off, and when they come, they go away, there is problems. Can you manage this thing, because we are losing? And we say, no, our members are not safe. When they die, it is us that are going to have problems. So I want to raise these things, that they are complaining that they know that everything that has been done in the mines, we are the ones that are reporting. So, but I wanted to confirm that we don't represent him, and he's not our friend. But we were concerned that on the very same day that things happened,
he was threatened in the presence of the regional chairperson, and his threat came to the very same day that he was also dismissed, on the very same day where the very same CEO who was there threatened him that something is going to happen. And something happened.
Okay, can we do it like this? Let me answer the first issue, Honorable Larima, before I go to the department. Now let me play an open card. There is a decision that was taken by this committee, which will go back and deal with it now in terms of the minutes, which in my view will cater, because that one is an open process. The one of the committee inquiry, I think some of the issues clearly go there, not necessarily here. Let me explain, because the main purpose here was to say here is an issue that threatens the stability not just of the industry, but also in terms of the social setup in that area. So I just want to dispose of it. But I want to come to the department. Look, I don't want us to... We can leave this issue. And I'm not a DG. Unfortunately, I can't play the terrain the way you are playing. But you are invited to a committee to come and present on a situation and a crisis. Now, we need accurate information and facts. Then the next thing is that we will have to go and check. We don't have the information. Last week's presentation, I would say, by NUM again, sorry that they have to rush for a flight, by NUM again, and I think it was also made as a concession here, they stated clearly that their problems started as soon as Tegeta took over. I've even had someone, you see, because so that we knew, I've even had someone who says, no, there is no such a thing. The inspections that were conducted didn't start in February this year. Except if you must ask a straightforward question then, was it for the first time in February there was this inspection that was conducted? Why I'm asking that is that, maybe to start on this point, that the issue, Babu Zondi, that is not being answered is that NUM says in order for the order or the notice to be effective, it has to be rectified by a senior person in head office. I didn't want to say, because it's like, to me, I don't want to sound like in the police service where you don't know who's a constable, who's a sergeant, who's a whatever, because I'll call wrong positions. But it has to be rectified by. Maybe the question should be, have these orders or notices been duly authorized or approved or justified or whatever as required by procedure? Maybe that should be the question. Two, we need, when we sit here, to have certainty. When we say, no, we'll go and check and so forth, the truth of the matter is that I'm trying now to check which method this one used and which method that the DMR did not use. That this one, both of them, the rescue practitioner, I think is started on the, appointed on the 19th or whatever. So is not even a month there. I don't know where you got that information to say, no, there's something they say, they take from Peter to Paul for them to operate. That's what they say. It's not even NUM. NUM said it last week. They said it when we were there. Now, the answer is, no, we've never seen that. Now, it's going to take us to what, for me, I would have expected, that we shouldn't go below. You see, now, we couldn't go above what was presented to us, but now we also have to avoid to go below what was reported. If we can't get a precise answer that says no, so much investigations were conducted, it was from this day, because we are talking about a company here, and when you are coming here, you knew that we'll be dealing with this company. Surely these people will be needing facts. Now, if we say then we don't know whether they can take machines, you see now NUM makes the worst one. It's the wildest of them all. But if we're sitting here, the department can't dispute that. They say, no, we're worried if it's eight companies. It actually means they can take the machine at night, rush it somewhere else. But let me be very careless. NUM says, yeah, we say we've got inspectors. NUM says, by the way, as we're sitting here, there are no blasting equipment. No, they say it. The department can't say that. That is why I'm asking, why most of the things that are related to monitoring and compliance enforcement will be known by other people. Let's take the point that we were raising here. You said there will be the reps, health and safety reps. It's either NUM, then they are misleading. Their health and safety reps did not say that we were there, but they never raised the issue. You see? So we have to find a way where, instead of having more, I would appreciate to say, look, it's a better, I know we may not agree again with honorable members. Chair, it was an oversight on our part that we never took serious concentration on this matter. Because I said, in the event what they say, which we have got no reason now because no one is disputing, even the event that is true what they are saying, it actually means health and safety has been compromised. That's what to me in simple terms it says. And as we speak, it may be more compromised. So I take the point, and we're not going to make it, DG, to give us an answer that but I'm saying, surely from a committee's point of view, we require things that are concrete, and I find it very odd that an outsider who came in less than a month, it's only 2 weeks, by the way, there, 2 weeks, can make a bold statement. A department that has got a 24-hour responsibility can neither dispute nor confirm. This takes me to another issue again that I really forgot. I don't know whether it's true what they say, lays or something. Part of the submission that they made, and I think the DG said, well, we don't know, they've not been able to come to us for Section 11. Part of the submission that they made, NUM said, by the way, the company has been sold. We are told it's being sold. Already there is a $400 million upfront deposit. Then the department said, no, we are hearing that for the first time. We don't know. The issue that they raised, it was not this one. They then said, look, the company that we're told is buying, I don't know whether now it has changed. The company that we're told is buying here is a company called Charles King, something like that. We'll read it there in the minutes. Then that company, when their own investigation, I won't say what is written in the minutes, because in the minutes says shows and fashion. They say that company is a clothing company. That has got no relationship with mining. Now, the problem is that from that side to this side that is gone now, there seems to be a co-relationship when they give information. But this information is neither disputed nor confirmed, which is going to make the work of the committee more difficult to see then which solution do you find. Until such time, we then do something that I don't think it will be palatable. To say, instead of getting that information, which is not what I'm saying we will do, but instead of not getting that information, we devise mechanisms where we can even have to verify and counter the information at our disposal. Because I hate as I'm sitting here that NUM says, by the way, even this business rescue practitioner may not avoid the stripping of assets, of which by the then the next step is legal. But I get comfort on the fact that the minister has put his head on the plug and said, give me a time, let me meet with all stakeholders, give me a time, you can invite me again. At least by then, probably we'll have a fact. But I don't know, I can't dig the information that you declare that you cannot help us in the committee. I would have thought to me we'll get a general summary that says, look, in terms of the inspections that have been conducted, this is what had happened. Because for me, for DMR to sit and does not have, let's put Tegeta aside and take another mine. When you come here and then we say, like we usually go on oversight, surely we need to know the record of the level of compliance of that that mine. Either mine. If no way to sit and then go to a mine and then we are told, no, as we are dealing with this mine, we still have to go and check the record. It becomes automatic when we say presentation on this particular issue, amongst other things, it's this level of compliance. And I can't get it now. But I'm not going to force, except if you want to say you have to rethink the answer you've initially given. Because to me, it leaves something that's... I'm sorry, DG, again. I don't want workers when you, the regional manager is a topic today. I don't want tomorrow when you say, and remember, this is your executive or your staff comes back and say, hey, that chairperson. Now we find ourselves like this, or when you get out of this, you say, give me a reason why a particular action can't be taken against you, or what. No, I'm not trying to say that. But I'm saying, coming to this committee, we have to have facts on the table. Is this, maybe rephrasing it, is this the company that has got a record of compliance or non-compliance? And what is it that justifies that? How, what is the degree? On what side, if then, so that I don't speak on your behalf, Babuzon, if on the other side of social and labor plans there is a degree, they can speak for it. But on the side, if on the side of mine health and safety there is no information, that is why I said all these people are under you, which is not for me to say when the other one speaks, doesn't speak on behalf of the other. But if you have to rethink, before we go, because honorable members, we have to go and take decision now. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think maybe the information may not have come out quite clear in the presentation, but the information is there. And I would really like to take Honorable Members to page 12 and 16 of the presentation in particular and map out different scenarios that are here. If you look at the Brakfontein Colliery, we are saying there we have instructed the company to pay financial provision. So financial provision currently is managed under National Environmental Management Act. So what we're basically saying there is that we have directed the company under Section 24 of NEMA to top up the financial provision, which is a shortfall. So we it shows that we have done something. And also on page 16 of the presentation, we are showing that where there is financial provision that is held by Liberty and Guardrisk, we are saying that financial provision, because the bank, the insurance companies have expressed interest that they want to withdraw their guarantees. We are then saying that we have directed that the company makes sure that the money that is held in trust, in a trust account, must be deposited into the department's account in a form of a cash deposit. So what we're trying to show there is that under the National Environmental Management Act, we have taken action. And then maybe to again, and we can provide details on that. I think when we responded to say we can provide details, that's what we were referring to. And then maybe to zoom into the issues of social and labor plan, which, Chairperson, you have a question as to whether the orders need to be confirmed. Yes, it is correct, Chairperson, that if you look at Section 93 of the Act, once a regional manager issues a Section 93 directive and gives it to the company, the delegatee of the Director General, which is the Chief Director, under the circumstances, must confirm or set aside that order within 60 days. The order doesn't become effective if it is not confirmed or set aside within 60 days. So from the day that the regional manager issues that Section 93, it becomes effective. The confirmation or the setting aside of that order becomes another administrative issue, and another administrative process. And I think, Chairperson, we have tried to show that particularly in Sheba Uranium, when we went on site and found non-compliance on the issues that we've listed, we have issued those directives in terms of Section 93, which personally I would say I have confirmed. And I would also assume that I saw directives that are being mentioned and on page 6 of the presentation, that the company was issued with a Section 93 in respect of the Optimum mines on the 19th of February. So the chief director still has that grace of 60 days to confirm this order. But if the order has been served to the company, has been issued to the company by a regional manager, it remains valid until it is confirmed or set aside by the delegatee of the Director General. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. with regard to Optimum, just to make a comparison with other mining companies, I mean, since they started operating, they've never had a fatality. No fatality occurred at the Tegeta mines, right? And if I can just make an example this year, compare them with other coal mining companies. For example, so far this year, one of the coal mining companies have had 3 fatalities this year. Compared to Tegeta, they haven't had a fatality. Again, also our focus as a department will focus on the priority mines, all the mines that are having a lot of accidents and fatalities. But again, when our inspectors went to do audits and inspections at Tegeta mine, since 2006, they've been issuing instructions, not just Section 54 instructions, even Section 55 instructions. It's just that we prioritize the Section 54 instructions because that's where we stop a section of the mine or the whole mine. But over and above the Section 54, they even issue Section 55 instructions. And unfortunately, we didn't bring the number of those Section 55 instructions. But all of that information can be provided to the committee. And with regard to the Section 54 that were issued, I'll make these following examples. The first one was issued on 30 May. That one was for ventilation. Obviously, the mine did not comply to the ventilation standards. That's why the inspector issued them with an instruction. The second one was issued on the 17th of August. For workshops, again, there were non-compliances of the mine when it comes to them, housekeeping in their workshops. The third one was issued on the 2nd of September, also in 2017. That one was also for non-compliance due to the way that they were maintaining that electrical equipment on the particular mine. But again, we'll also provide other instructions that were issued to the mine.
Honorable members, now we have asked questions, we have seeked clarities, we have made opinions. Sorry to keep you here, but we had to do it. The ball is in your court now.
may make my work easier. But how? No, you can't be fine when there's no discussion. Nothing. What? How can you be fine when there's nothing? Baulorem.
This is an issue that's going to have to come up in our other process, quite clearly. I agree. As for today's discussions, I'm still concerned about the business rescue practitioners. The minister has said that he's going to keep an eye on it. I would hope that we could trust him to do that, to make sure that nothing untoward happens.
Honorable Chafta.
Yeah, Chair, I think there is still a long way to go, Chair, because though we have engaged in so much discussions, but seemingly there is still no clear direction which will be followed from now. Rather than to say we will be maybe waiting for the business rescue practitioners maybe to come back and report on the progress they are doing to save the money.
Chair, my concern is on the operation of the mine. If there is no operation, there is no income, maybe the department must go back and make the point that there is operation in the mine. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Mine, Chair, I think it's important that the department come closer to those mines. I think it's important so that we're able to have functional mines. You know, it's become clear that there and there, you know, NUM, you know, always workers will make allegations about their bosses. That's what I know. I was a worker also at some stage, so I normally all keep the blame all to my boss. I always does that. And it makes us conditioned to be applicable all the time, Chair. So I think it's important that department come closer there and deal with that particular issue so that the machine that need to be fixed make it a point that those things are happening. So that when we meet again, we don't meet for the same matter. We meet for new matters, Chair, for the issue of progress. I think it's important to do that. Thank you very much. Okay. Honourable members, can we do this? The DG, fortunately, is a lawyer, so as an advocate, we take decisions. He will see how legally to comply with those decisions. The first thing I must say, I always say when you come to the committee, be prepared to even answer the questions that other people would fear to ask. I always prefer to deal with things as they are. So that we don't end up at times dealing with things that are completely irrelevant from the matter, simply because we're avoiding other things. So, you know, at least DG, you might be adapting now, that this is one committee that can ruffle, and you may feel that, you are given a flag. No, it's because this committee has to do its work. And at the end of the day, we want, one, to be better than we were yesterday. We never knew some of the things, but we have learned. But also we want you to be better than yesterday. When you come out of here to say, no, I didn't understand this, or I was not aware of this, but now I know what has happened. Sometimes every experience is a first time. It makes you more aware when you go to the second one. Can we do this, honorable member? That's why I said it will need you, DG. The first point of call, including with the minister, but who are not operational. First thing, can the department, through its personnel,
visit all the four mines, conduct an audit of the kind of equipment that is available there. You, what do you call it? Call it an inventory. Let's have an inventory. It's because of what was said there, so that we know what is there and we know what is not there at the time of disposing or whatever you call it. So I don't know how you interact with the fact that the business rescue practitioner said, Kalista Tulosak. I don't know what how you do it, but go there, do an inventory, and keep that inventory. Maybe the committee one day would want to know. Secondly, can you do an audit of the agreed SLPs? Agreed SLPs, those that were there at the time of the transaction, which means they would have been carried by Glencore, and those that were made as a commitment. Obviously, others would have transferred before conclusion. And in doing so, give us an update on the status of those SLP commitments. And so that we can know whether there was a degree of compliance or non-compliance. It's going to help you and us. Thirdly, this will require more information on the question of, I take it, Zondo, when you say, but we have to understand, maybe I should have asked, is this an open cast mine? An underground. He said there were two undergrounds, two open cast, which could reflect on why you may. If it's an open cast, probably will not be surprised, because an open cast, you can't have fatalities. Is it an open cast? Or you still want to go and check? Okay. We need it. We need it. And in doing so, it's not only fatalities, but it's injuries. And what would be the cause thereof? That is number four, ne? Three, okay. Number four, can you as a department investigate whether there is enough protective clothing equipment, and if not, probably an estimation for how long? That will relate to the question again, whether the allegation made here is it true that supply chain doesn't work there. Instead, is twinning that works. I need a nut this side. This one need a cable. I'll give you the cable. Give me the nut. Just to look at this thing, that there's been no commitment. But that's what for me we wanted to hear from the department. There's been no commitment in terms of improving and servicing the equipment for its performance. That will take us to the next issue. Can you address that allegation by NUM that, as they speak, there is not even a blasting equipment? It's in line with this thing that if there is no blasting equipment, so what will these people that are going back to work to do? I'm talking about things that relate. I want us to focus on things that relate to the situation that make those workers to go back to work. Or not go back to work, either way. The last one, I want to leave this one because it just combines everything on what we should talk about. Is that as a committee, we are comforted by the fact that the minister has said he's going to the mines. Can we then say, based on that assurance, accept as a committee that suggests that the department is fully intervening in that situation on the mines, and where possible or it requires it is undertaken, it will come back to the committee and brief it of future developments. The reason I'm saying that it must fully intervene, we're looking even at the disaster now, we don't know what will be the case tomorrow. You see? If you were to get a buyer, they don't get the free banking facility, then they get a buyer, the buyer buys them completely, then it means the matter is solved. Is that what it means? What if the business rescue practitioner still want to continue? Well, I listened, they said sometimes the business rescue practitioner can be permanent to monitor the plan. What if the plan of the business rescue practitioner goes up to 2032? And what becomes the role of the department? And you school at it one day. The last issue is a general assignment. DG, can you, down the line, we look where we put this thing? Well, I think the committee has to deal, and I know the difficulty with it is that it cut across. But this is a lesson, I'll be honest. I never knew that business rescue, honestly, let alone that I'm still doubtful to accept it, that a business rescue, I under sitting next to me, can just wake up and go to Mr. Piginini by qualifications that they have, both of them, and say, no, Mr. Luzipo is failing to run his company, whatever the case that might be. Can you come and do the job? Mr. Mhlongo, we must appoint you because we know you are a business rescue practitioner. Completely, there is an authority here that issues licenses. It's nowhere to be found or even to be consulted. You are still sitting there looking for Section 11, but Section 11 that will come is business rescue. I don't know which section is it in terms of the laws that governs, particularly your MPRDA. I don't know which section the business rescue falls under. Every time there is a quotation, it's a quote from a Companies Act. So why do you put conditions when those conditions can just be run over? In essence, I can tell you, the way that I read it, I can organize a business rescue myself and put my company under business rescue. Just it's how I connect the dots, and I'm gone. Then they run the business. The worst thing is that normally, even when the business rescue, those that are in operation, they get briefed. I don't know. So can you one day prepare something to come and present in this committee, not just the conditions, say just go and prepare yourself on this, because it may not be the first time we are confronted with it. In fact, it's becoming a common exercise. Just prepare something. What are the advantages and disadvantages, merits and demerits of a business rescue practitioner? I'm saying this because we should not criticize people when ourselves apply for it. It's not part of this committee. But I just heard, when we're still dealing with this thing, I then heard that SAA has been put under business rescue by the Minister of Finance. So you shouldn't pretend as if it's only private sector that is doing this thing in the mines. It's done even by government. But what are the pros and cons, especially in our own industry, in the industry we are in? Lastly, this may not relate to you, it relates to this committee. Can you agree that some of the issues that are raised will only be determined in the other process as to what extent have been related to be of influence in the other process that we have to undertake as a committee moving forward? But I must say, DG, at least, and you were there, last week. Take no offense, please. Yeah. It was not as it was last week, and I now understand why. You deprived us, people who also were not there to answer issues of mine health and safety. They were not there to answer issues of SLP compliance. And sometimes when you say I'm acting, the first thing for someone who is acting is lack of confidence. I can tell you I've done that to say I'm acting on this. Someday someone phones you and say, don't get comfortable. Who says, where is Sorens? So we say, no, he's not around. Who are you? You say, I'm Sorens. What are you doing in somebody's position? And then they tell you, for us it's worse. We never elected you. We know who we elected as our leader. So confidence in everything you do is number one. Two, knowledge and a field. Taking someone tomorrow and say, come and chair the committee on mineral resources and ignore those members that are present, probably you will find that that person still wants even to be clarified into what is an SLP. Even myself, I grappled until I adjusted. So we thank you very much, but extend also our word of appreciation to the minister, first by respecting this committee and be here, secondly by the commitment that he has made, including yourselves, that on you are all dealing with the issue. We just hope from now onwards, all what we want to see first is the situation being normalized, those workers going to work. I didn't want to say it when they were here. The potential exists that even after this, you see the problem when there's a simple general principle. We fought, we defeated even some of us only in the trade union movement. It's a principle of no work, no pay. You might be confronted, it may not arise now, yeah. You might be confronted by that thing that says, no, you say no work, no pay, but you made us. By the way, the reason we're out is because we were working and not paid. So this time around, the cause of being out is not being paid. I don't know, Honorable Nurse, I wanted to leave it at that. Are members comfortable with that form of a summary and a logical decision? You are talking to the chairperson. Don't worry, we are not in agreement with anyone else. Is that suffice? No, put there.
No, wait, don't intimidate him.
No, Hoshi doesn't intimidate me. okay, yeah, let's go along with it. Mr. Chair, I'll back that up.
Honorable Jafta?
Yes, Chair, let me second you. Honorable Lori Matadu,
okay.
Swallow that rules.
Chair, I think it's in order. Thank you.
Honorable Matala?
Chair, I'm comfortable with the issues. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Pikinin?
No, Chair, I support that, Chair.
Okay. You know, when we're reconvening at this meeting, there's something that happened, and I can see it's happening again. When we're supposed to take a decision, when we're resuming the meeting, Honorable Khawula was out and Honorable Matlala was out. And we continued, Honorable Khawula came in, and then Honorable Matlala, after 15 or so minutes, came in, and then Honorable Khawula went out. Now it just happened. Honorable Matlala had gone out, then he comes back, Honorable Khawula goes out. I don't know what is happening outside, but I don't know. You see? There he comes in. We want you to confirm, we've suggested the process. Do you agree? Other members agree, or they are comfortable with it? We just want your confirmation. The process that we suggested. Yeah. Yes.
In the name? Okay. No, I don't necessarily have a problem, Chair, especially when you qualified it by saying perhaps some areas we might have to pursue the route of the other leg of the route that we are taking. But I would have been comfortable that on that way forward, you also put the point that was raised by Noam, that I'm not sure what role they could play to check if the process of business rescue does not lead to looting, because that's a point that they made, that normally sometimes the business rescue process, it ends up where those people end up taking a stick rather than helping the company. I am not sure if that could be covered in the process where the minister is going to attend to those issues, where he takes into confidence all stakeholders. But if there is a role that the DMR as an authority could play in ensuring that that business rescue process is executed in a way that allay the fears of the workers, I would be comfortable with that. I think they've made a commitment on the issue of investigating the BE fixed certificate. That one we're going to hold on them. Otherwise, I'm fine, Chair. Thank you very much.
Okay. No, probably you might have left. I assumed, I thought you left a little bit later. No, what we've said is that part of the first task is that must go and do an audit, or what we would call an inventory of what equipment or material that is there, so that if what NUM were raising, we can be able to hold them to account to say, at this point you had this one and you had that one. So, but we have outlined the second issue. We said we take comfort on the commitment of the minister. We are of the view that the minister, having made such interventions directly, will then deal with the issue by reverting back to the committee. But we have also said the department must prepare in the industry, focusing on this industry, the issue of the merits and demerits of the business rescue practitioners, which we think it will cover. Having said so, honorable members, before we talk about other issues, can we quickly dispense with the minutes? Let's take the minutes of the 21st.